G'day, this is Big Brady Marshall.
This is Brian Alvarez.
This is Dean Brady of the Millennials.
This is the Jurassic Punk Sid Parker.
How many of you guys have heard the term kayfabe?
Blue Doggers. This is Jay Hunter from OSW Review.
This is Matt Grim Basso.
This is the loosest kid in Australian wrestling, Adam Brooks.
This is Scrap Brand Adam Pearce, and you are locked in
to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Welcome everyone to Wrestle Radio Australia. I'm your host Todd Eastman. I hope you all went out like we tell you every week and enjoyed local pro wrestling. If you did this weekend, you probably saw a title change because the weekend was full of them all around the country. In WA, you had the Untouchables win the EPW tag titles. That's Damian Slater and Marcus Pitt. In New South Wales, PWA had two titles change with Jack Bonds and Mick Moretti, the Four Nations, taking the PWA tag titles, and Jonah Rock is the new PWA heavyweight champion. In Adelaide, Indy Hartwell is now the new E-Pro and Riot City Wrestling champion, women's champion, and world-class Chris Basso defeated Nick Armstrong to become the RCW champion for the third time. I think that's all of them. Anyway, and not to mention that, but also the big bombshell that was dropped on Sunday with the WWE announcing that they're coming down to Australia, not just coming down for a tour, they're coming down for a pay-per-view. It's the Super Showdown, I think it's called. Let me look. This is great radio. Yeah, Super Showdown. It's on October the 6th, but the tickets are on sale, I think, 28th they go on sale. So get out and see that, because not only that, you'll be in Melbourne, and when you're in Melbourne, the night before that, MCW will have a show. So go and check out some local product before you go and check out the WWE, and you'll see how much better we are. Now, most of you guys know that since I started this new format of the show, I do two or I do three interviews an episode. This one's a bit different. So I only did one interview this episode, and that's with Jack Bonzo. And that's because when I sat down to talk to Jack, originally this was only going to be a 10, 15 minute interview, sort of like quick talk, get to know you, as I do with most of them, and then I'm out. But then Jack and I got to talking about ring psychology and also card psychology and training, and the time sort of just flew by, and it was so good stuff that I just wanted to keep it, and I wanted to let you guys all listen to it, because I think it's really important to see one of the guys who is really spearing the charge for Australian wrestling, especially in Sydney, well, definitely in Sydney, but around the world, around the country, really, and what he's got going at Newcastle Pro and PWA is really, really special, and anyone who's in Sydney should really get out to Max Watts or get to Nui Pro and see one of their shows. So without further ado, Four Nations member and PWA tag champion, Jack Bonzo, on Wrestle Radio Australia. Jack Bonzo, thank you very much for joining us, mate.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
if someone had told you at the start of, say, 2017, that in 2018 you'd face Yuji Nagata, Ultimo Dragon, Mustache Mountain, Ryback, would you have believed him?
No. No, it's been a huge year. It's been a huge 2 years. I suppose 2017, we started to see the beginning of it a little bit. I didn't know it would quite end up that way that quickly, but I mean, if you had said that in 2016 or something, it wouldn't have even been close to being on the radar.
Well, Nui Pro has grown in leaps and bounds in the last 2 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, Nui Pro is getting big. That was that's been a bit more of a passion project for mine, for me, just because it was one of those things. I think there was a reputation in New South Wales for a long time that, oh, New South Wales doesn't draw, but I always felt that it had the potential to. Like, Sydney and stuff's one of the biggest markets for anything, like WWE and stuff. They always treated it as an A market. But nobody locally drew, and I always just felt it was because that things weren't done correctly. So Newcastle Pro was kind of a matter of us just putting our money where our mouth was. and so then we did it, you know, like, well, you look back at it, like when we started Newcastle Pro, I think we've been doing it for 6 years now or something. When we started, our first shows had 70 to 80 people in a small community hall. And I talk about this stuff all the time with the wrestlers, but our whole concept was that we always felt we had a good quality of product. It was just a matter of getting the marketing. So what would happen is if we could get 70 people there, we'd we would just wrestle in such a way and have the shows happen in such a way that that 70 people were going to come back next time, and then we would do some more advertising, and then we would get 100 people. But then out of that 100 people, we would retain 80 people for the next show, and that's why we just we just built it up every month until we got to the point where probably, you know, 4 years later, you know, we had 450. And that original 70 people were still coming to the shows.
Yeah, that's what I've always said. I always said if you can get, say, 100 people in and they will bring, even if they bring 10 extra people to the next show, well, you can at least retain like 80% of that. You're still doing well.
Yeah.
Because you're still...
Well, yeah, that's the thing. The problem is, you know, it's in a business thing, right? Like, so, you know, I've got a business degree and an accounting master's and stuff like that. Like, one of the major the things they would... talk about when they talk about in business is that it's cheaper to retain a customer than it is to get a new customer. So a lot of the shows, you have to really be conscious of keeping your current crowd happy, because you don't want to have to advertise to draw that same 100 people next time plus another 20. You only want to advertise to get another 50 people so you can save money in advertising, but then you want to keep the people that already saw your show. It's just a cheaper way of doing things and being able to build up the bigger crowds.
Yeah, but then you're also smart enough to know that you need to advertise more than just in Facebook or in, do you know what I mean? The advertisements you'd put up in the shopping mall that was across the road from the venue, that was brilliant.
Yeah, that was probably one of the real turning points. We always experiment. We looked at it this way, like, you know, I mean, wrestling's got to make money. It has to, and it's not that you have to be necessarily in it to make and pocket the money, but the shows themselves need to make money. Like, if your show's losing money, then your product isn't any good. So it's just a way of measuring if people like what you're doing. So whenever we would profit from the wrestling, we would just experiment with the money, and sometimes we were wrong and sometimes we were right. But, like, I mean, we've had ads at the beginning of movies. Like, when Batman versus Superman came out, we had ads for that first week for Newcastle Pro playing at the beginning of Batman versus Superman.
That's brilliant.
Didn't make any difference to our crowd whatsoever.
Really?
Oh, it just didn't work. I don't know why. It didn't work. It just did not work. We thought we'd have the same kind of people who, I mean, wrestling and comic book superheroes are very similar when you think about it.
Like, and a lot of wrestlers are comic book fans too. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, think about it this way: you know, larger than life characters who can take a stupid amount of damage, wearing spandex, solving every problem with violence. It's exactly the same thing. So, like, we thought that it would be the same market, and it was, like, I mean, not necessarily, we may not have been wrong about the market, but it didn't even make a dent. Like, I think we might have had 50 more people than the month before, but that happens anyway sometimes.
It fluctuates, doesn't it? Yeah.
So it was no kind of thing, but yeah, that ad we put in that, and still remains there to this day. We just change it over every 4 months. Is easily the most effective advertising we've ever had, in conjunction with the internet stuff. Like, we find if we don't do the internet stuff, it's the same thing we were talking about before, about once you get fans, retaining them. Once you get somebody to like your Facebook page, it's easier to keep them updated on what's going on again. So it's an important aspect of it. But some places rely on it entirely and do well with it. But I mean, that's more like the World Series wrestling stuff and what kind of thing. I don't think they do any advertising really except for their Facebook, but then they book Matt Riddle and...
Yeah, and they got the name recognition.
Yeah, so you can get away with that kind of thing more that way. But yeah, you always want a triple-pronged, like a three-pronged approach. So I think I've always thought that Facebook and Twitter and stuff was one prong, trying to get a run of events. Like, if you can get a regular event in a regular venue and... like, at the event, have a good show, and then be like, hey, guys, you got to come back next time. You can buy tickets right now. That's a really effective way to get people hooked.
Yeah.
It's soap opera, you know? Like, you just – whatever happens this time means you have to come back and see what happens next time kind
that's
of thing.
Right. And it's also – you can have the best advertising in the world, but if you turn up to the show and the show is shit, that they're never going to come back to it, are they?
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's why when you see some places that the quality is not as high, they can still get big crowds sometimes. But the problem is that the people just never come back again. And they all think that Australian wrestling is all exactly the same thing. So if they go and see a bad product, it makes it harder for everyone to draw any of those people again. And, you know, if you see something you like, you tell one person. If you see something that's stupid, you tell five people. Like, it's worse it's worse for other people. And that's why, again, the other thing with Newcastle Pro and with PWA as well that I try to push as much as humanly possible is that everybody's welcome to come and train. I don't care where you wrestle afterwards because, you know, shows that I'm not associated with, it is still better for me and for everyone in general if they're the highest quality they can possibly be. I don't want other places to be crap because then it's just going to wreck wrestling for everyone.
Yeah. That's one of my bugbears up here in Queensland is that you see guys that run promotions that are terrible. They draw maybe 17, 18 people. They close down, but then they'll open up again in a month or two with a different name using the same tactics, the same people, the same everything. I don't understand what they've done differently to try and improve it.
Yeah, well, I think with some people in wrestling, it's not about... That's what I was saying before about it has to be about making money. I mean, like, it's not that it's really about making money, but if you don't have that, if you don't have that perspective, then like you can't. You make mistakes, but the mistakes don't get fixed. You don't learn from your mistakes because you don't have something to measure. Like a lot of the difficulty with wrestling is people say, "Oh, well, you said it was crap, but we thought it was really good." There's no objective way. There's no way to. I mean, subjective. There's no way to measure it. You know, there's no way to really measure quality of wrestling. So the only way we can measure quality of wrestling is consistently high crowd numbers and consistently making money. That's the way you can, by the cent, measure wrestling. That's why John Cena is the best wrestler in the world because he makes the most money. And there's just no other way of arguing it. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff that you prefer. But realistically, at the end of the day, the only true measurement we have is the professional side of it, the fact that it's supposed to be a job. So it's the guys who are making cash. It's a lot more impressive when someone like the Young Bucks are making, you know, probably without exaggeration, you know, maybe like $1 million. You know, it might be less than that, but hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they don't need the WWE. That's real, real fucking impressive. But you know, that's the kind of perspective, and you need that point of view. And so, you know, a lot of people, it's getting a lot better. But from my experience, a lot of the time, people's attitude is it's more to them. Well, I paid my registration money. I just want to go down and play footy on the weekend because I enjoy playing footy. You know, and that's great. And it's the same with wrestling. I enjoy doing wrestling, so I go out and wrestle on the weekend. And just because I don't want to dedicate my whole life to going to the gym and dieting and making sure it's good doesn't mean that I shouldn't get to enjoy wrestling too. And I'm like, well, that's great. If you just go to training and have training matches in front of your mates, the same way that if you were going to pay for your rego and play F-grade footy, you know, maybe your family might show up and watch you at the park, but they don't sell tickets for $50.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like the ones who they sell tickets for take it properly. Like you don't do it in front of a crowd. So if you're going to – if you want to do it in front of a crowd, it needs to be looked at from the business perspective. Like, yeah. It has to be good.
Well, that F-grade footy are making their money off the registration, not off people through the door, and maybe just people that come through the door at the bar. But aside from that, they're making their money off the registration of the players, not the crowds coming in, are they?
Yeah. Well, anyone can go and watch F-grade footy. It plays at the park on Sundays at 3 p.m. You can walk up and have a look if you want. Like, but they don't charge people to come in. People aren't, you know, it's not advertised.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. But it's what was I going to say? It's a testament to you that you go out and say that you'll offer to go, because I saw a post not long ago saying you'd offer to go and train or go and help train any promotion around that wants to invite you to it because you just want everyone to be better.
Absolutely. Well, that was a little more of a reactive thing. That particular post was in reaction to an argument that I had with somebody, and they tried to tell me that their guys were properly trained and they provide all these opportunities and they do different things like that. And I said, well, let me come. When do you guys train? I'll show up. I'll show you what I mean. Like, I'm not trying to be a dick about it. I was just like literally just kind of saying, like, I will come and step by step explain to you what I mean when I say that your training isn't very good. And again, it's not an ego thing. It's not a trying to be tougher or better than everybody thing. It's like, you know, I've seen training schools where they taught neck breakers and pile drivers on the first day. You know what I mean? And somebody got taken away in an ambulance. That actually happened. You know, like there is no registrar. There is no, you know, guiding body for this kind of thing. There is no safety like guidelines in place for pro wrestling that can be enforced by law. So when guys, you know, advertise that they have a training school and simply do not have the ability to teach somebody correctly, not only are they potentially putting a lot of new people who, if they'd gone to the right school, could have become great wrestlers, you know, they're putting a lot of people's lives in danger. Like, and it's just like, you show up, you're not trained properly, that you, somebody goes, I'll give you a German suplex, but you don't know to tuck your head, you're not used to bumping, you don't know to throw your hands down. The guy throwing the German has never bridged before, so doesn't know how to get underneath you. It doesn't know how to pop his hips, just throws you on your head. You might never walk again. And it's not only that, like, I mean, literally, like, you might never walk again. Like, actually think about that. For the stupidity of what pro wrestling is, you take some kid and put him in a spot where all he ever wanted to do was be Triple H or to be a great wrestler or to have fun with it, and then he's in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. That can happen.
Yeah.
I just don't think people remember the seriousness and the actual danger of what we do. And so when, like, you see schools like that that are advertising, you can come and train. They it's a money grab. They train for a week every 3 months, or it's they train once every 6 weeks, and it's like, oh, we've got a show coming up, we better run a training session. You know, it just doesn't work. And when they don't know how to bump, they don't know the basics, they don't know that they're supposed to teach the basics, they don't know that even if you know the basics but aren't in a fit enough, strong enough state, you can still get hurt. Like, it's just it's just one of those things where, so I just directly call people out on it, and I always thought it's a safety thing. Like I'm not trying to, you know, say out, be elitist and say that our thing is the best or whatever like that, but I'm just saying, look,
you've got the runs on the board though, haven't you? You've been and trained at ROH, I believe, and stuff like that. So you've been and you've done all this stuff, so you've got the credentials to be able to say, look, you're not doing this right.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, it's all about safety. Like, whatever your agreements or thoughts come to psychology and matches and different things like that, if you teach somebody how to protect themselves when they're falling down, and you teach somebody else how to and you teach them how to protect other people while they're throwing them and stuff like that, other than that, I couldn't give a shit. But that's the thing. Like, I've trained at Booker T's for 3 months. I trained at Shikara. Shikara is the best training school in the world, as far as I'm, like, just in terms of being – a really great wrestler. I've never seen anything like Mike Quackenbush running a training session. It's just the best. But also, you know, Ring of Honor was great. I went to CZW. I've done School of Hard Knocks, which is the Jesse Hernandez school in Los Angeles, which is where Shane Haste and that went a lot when they were first going to America. Like, very good place. I went to the Fale Dojo in New Zealand, and I trained with them for a week. And I did the Gato seminar, Kevin Nash seminar. Like, there are tons of different things. My dad he spent 10 years doing the weapons defense training for the marshals and stuff like that. And he would teach women's self-defense classes, and I would help him do that. Like, and he was a trainer for a job. So I've been passed down a lot of how to be a trainer and kind of different things like that. So actually being a wrestling trainer is what I consider to be one of my great strengths. And I'm more than happy to help anybody else out with that. Like, no ego or anything, but it's just it's a really important thing to me, like pro wrestling training. And when I see people doing it poorly or doing it wrong, I just know the effects that it can have on people. Like, even if you teach someone badly, they may never hurt themselves. They may hurt someone else.
That's right. And it's worse. You know, like, it's probably worse if you hurt someone else than if you hurt yourself, because you've got to live with that guilt of what you've done to them.
Yeah, I really think so. You know, and if you can instill an attitude in people where they respect the wrestling enough to, like, take it that seriously, then they're not going to hurt other people. Like, you know, the thing we always tell people is, like, okay, what's the second most important thing? Protecting myself. What's the most important thing? Protecting my opponent. And it's because if the most important thing to you is protecting your opponent, and the most important thing to your opponent is protecting you, then you're going to do okay.
Yeah, exactly. But you're not just passionate about that sort of thing. You're also passionate about the psychology of cards and stuff like that, because I remember seeing a post, and I talked to you off air about this, about talking about guys that don't like being in opening matches, but because they don't realize how important an opening match is on a card.
Yeah, I think the other part of that kind of post too is, it's like, I don't know if you've ever been to a PWA or Newcastle Pro, like, they're not a lot of everyone's pretty, it's a pretty good environment. Everyone's pretty happy and understanding of their place in the card, and doesn't worry too much about that kind of thing. But I see a lot of fans who don't understand the psychology of cards. They see their favorites in the opening match, and then they complain that it was stupid that their favorite was put in there. And I was just kind of like, calm down, guys. It's a good thing. Like, it's just one of those things. But, yeah, no, the psychology of cards is really important when putting a show together. And it's just through, like, years of experience, you know, and then doing all those seminars, picking people's brains and stuff like that. You know, if the opening match, for example, like, if you have a bad opening match and, you know, because the whole thing about wrestling is that, you know, it's crowd participation. You want the crowd to feel like they're involved in the show, and they need to be almost taught how to be a part of the show a little bit, because they can't jump in the ring. So you need to teach them, you know, specific ways, like to chant, to clap at different times, to do stuff. You need to teach them that when they chant or clap a certain way, you're going to do certain things. So you teach the crowd that they're controlling the match themselves, and that's how they really – everybody really enjoys themselves that way. But if the first match is bad and the crowd is down and sits on their hands and just kind of loses all their energy and it doesn't, you know, go very well kind of thing, trying to get them back is damn near impossible.
Yeah, it's really a tone setter, isn't it? The first match is a tone setter for the rest of the night.
Yeah, with that being said, if you have a really good opening match, the rest of the card can suck, but the crowd will still have a time. Like that's the real difference, is that it's a really pivotal point. It's probably the second most important thing, because the most important thing really is the crowd. Like, people don't remember what they thought and people don't remember what happened, but people remember how they feel. So if at the beginning of the night they're super into the card, they're having a great time, but, you know, say your show goes for 4.5-5 hours, or something bad happens at the end, or the main event is really bad or something like that, and they feel flat and empty and unhappy at the end of the show when they go home, they just remember feeling flat and unhappy, and they don't want to go back. If you feel fantastic after the main event, you're like, oh, I want to see more wrestling forever, and that's what you remember feeling like at the end of the show, then they're going to want to come back, which is why, you know, depending on your audience, like if you're an adult audience, you could stretch it to three and a half hours. If you're in front of a kid audience, I would aim for 2 hours, just because of attention span. Like, it doesn't matter how good it is. If you stick a kid in front of something for 4 hours, they're going to be bored.
Yeah, exactly.
So you just got to, you know, it's card psychology. It depends on your audience. But that's why the main event's the most important spot. And that's why the rest of the card's job is to build, that's one of the other posts like that I put up was like, I hate seeing when people say the main event stole the show. The main event
is supposed to steal the show handed
to me on a silver platter. Like, literally the rest of the card's job is to give the show to the main event, because, you know, you want people feeling good at the end. The main event's what everybody should be walking out the door talking about. And if that didn't happen, something probably went wrong. Just stuff like that with card psychology. One of the other things we always talk about too, and this is where it gets interesting, is about, like, say you have two tag matches on the show, right?
Yep.
So if you do a thing, like, and everybody will know this as soon as they hear it, right? So you have, like, a tag match where there's a shine, the two heels will separate the babyface from his partner, he'll eventually break free, tag his partner, and then the guy will run in. Imagine having a match where the two heels separate the babyface from his partner and then pin him. There is no hot tag, and the thing is, and you would wonder why you would do that to a card, because the crowd is not going to react well to that. It's going to be flat.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. Or alternatively, you have the exact same situation, except instead of the heels pinning him, when the heel whips him off and the baby face does a sunset flip, and then instead of having it broken up, the match ends. The baby face pins in the middle of the heat. There is no hot tag, and the reason why you would do that, even though the crowd wouldn't react very well to it, is because you have a second tag match later on the card, and they do that exact same setup where that, you know, that babyface is being cut off from his partner. The crowd really has to question themselves: is he actually going to get that hot tag? Instead of just expecting that it's going to happen, and so then when you do give them the hot tag, they react that much stronger. So we talk about card psychology. It's not always about your match. It's about the card in general and what you can do to build to the next match, so that when the whole show ends, the crowd feels fantastic about the whole show, not just about you individually. And that's where it gets difficult, is to convince guys to do the best thing for the card instead of doing the best thing for them individually.
Or even the best thing for their match. One of my pet peeves when I'm watching a tag match, when I'm in a position of like a booker or something, is that they'll have their match planned and all that, and that's cool. But if they've got this this point where they're really good in getting really good heat on the face and the crowd's really up and ready for that hot tag, but the heel knows he's still got an X amount of stuff to go and just keeps on doing it and doesn't give the crowd that hot tag at that right moment, that can kill a match there too.
They have different priorities, you know, like people, especially in the world where we get a lot of GIFs and memes of cool moves and stuff like that, people are more worried about getting their shit in and getting their moves in and stuff than and getting over the crowd. But, you know, one thing I can tell you from experience is nothing feels better than the crowd being into whatever you're doing as opposed to, you know, hitting the moves and having the crowd shit on you. I think that's an experience thing. And the other thing is too, it's a level of matches thing. If you have 10 matches a year, you're going to want to get your shit in because you spend a month or 6 weeks thinking about every match and all the things that you want to do. You wrestle 3 times a weekend, you're not as worried.
you have a chance like tomorrow.
That's the point is, you know, you start to get more into about just getting money and making sure the crowd's on your side and making sure your merchandise gets sold. So you care more about doing the right thing for the match as opposed to having gifts and photos to share on Facebook and getting all your stuff in.
So this, like I said at the start of the interview, this past year you worked Yuji Nagata, Ultimate Dragon, Mustache Mountain, Robot. Who's the guys that you've learnt the most of in, like, during a match? Like, you've seen them do something and gone, fuck, that was really good.
Oh, shit, you mean during actually working with them?
Yeah, yeah.
That's difficult to say. That's just difficult to say. You know, like, the big thing, say, working Yuji Nagata was that, like, you know, because a lot of the time when we go in, like, Yuji Nagata is a
legend.
He's just a legend.
It's just
ridiculous. Like, and I mean, the match I had with him was perfect. And the thing that I really enjoyed about it was that he came in and he told me what was going to happen. And I just kind of went, great, that's exactly what I thought was going to, like, it was exactly the same as what I had in my mind. The only thing was he wanted me to do a drop kick, and I told him that I couldn't do a drop kick, so I had to do a suplex or I had to do a clothesline or something like that. But, I don't know, like, what you would say about learning. It's not about learning a lot of the time. It's more about making an impression on them.
Yeah.
Because the really tough thing when you're working one of these famous guys who are, you know, so many levels above you that if they don't feel like doing anything, it just doesn't matter. It's not an opportunity for them. It's an opportunity for you. Yeah. It's a chore for them a lot of the time. So coming in and I don't even know. I don't even know how much I learned. Like I'll tell you the major lesson I learned from these guys, too, and just all of them in general, is don't be intimidated. If anybody out there ever gets a chance to wrestle with someone, you got to be respectful and you got to understand that they're the ones who are in control of the match. But you know all of their moves, and they don't know any of yours.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you come in with ideas. Like, you know, Joey Ryan was a great one because he just kind of said, like, oh, it was really good working with you because you had a bunch of ideas. And all I did was I said to him, because I wrestled Carlito last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that I was wrestling Carlito until 4 p.m. on the day.
Oh, wow.
And not only that, I didn't know Carlito was in the country. He was a surprise. It was a house of hardcore, and he was the mystery guest. And I think everyone thought that either Rob Van Dam was coming or one of the Dudleys was coming or something like that. People had simply not considered Carlito. And so someone just comes up to me and just goes, yep, you're going to wrestle Carlito tonight and you're on second. And I was going, wait, what?
You're like, yeah, sure, okay.
Yeah, so I just had no. And then he didn't get to the building until 6:30. But the thing was, like, I just kind of went up to him and said, hey, man, we're wrestling today. Like, when you want to talk, just let me know. And he goes, yeah, cool. And then walks off. Like, yeah. He didn't feel like talking about anything. He doesn't need to. He knows what his stuff is. But then I came in with, like, one idea, and he kind of cut it in half and did whatever. And I was kind of, okay, yes, boss, no matter. And it was a good match, but I felt like I could have done better. But the lesson I learned from that was that when I wrestled Joey Ryan, I went to him and I said, listen, okay, so obviously, you know, you're Joey Ryan. I appreciate you very much having this match with me, and I'm, you know, very low down compared to you and stuff like that. But here's what I do for moves. Bang, 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 bang. Here's my ideas for this. Bang, 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 bang. I've got this and this on mine. I just ran through this whole thing. And I go, but of course, whatever you want to do is completely up to you, kind of thing like that. And then he kind of took it from there. And then that way it was just easier for him. Like, there's nothing worse for them. Like, I was talking to him afterwards. He says there's nothing worse when he wrestles someone like me and comes in and goes, what do you do? Do you have any ideas? And they're just like, oh, no, whatever you want to do. And he's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I don't know what you do.
And then we'll go home. Like, there's no thing to it. Like, unless you have ideas, because otherwise he doesn't. Like, you need a moveset. Like, you at least have to have some ideas. So that's one of the real things I pulled out, was you have to go in with a game plan, regardless of whether they just go, no, this is exactly what's happening, or regardless of whether they're like, do you have any ideas, and they're willing to talk it out with you. So it was, yeah, it was interesting. They've all been great. It's been so different too. Like, wrestling Nagata and then wrestling, you know, Mustache Mountain.
Yeah.
He was just totally different. And then wrestling Ryback, and he was totally different again. We've gone from Japanese to American to British, like, to all the different – and a tag match and all the different styles and stuff like that. Like, it's just
– That's amazing. And that's something just, that, what, 3-4 years ago you never would have thought would happen. You'd have to go, like, overseas to be able to do any of that. It wouldn't actually have to happen in the country.
Yeah, it's completely insane. And this Monday, I finally get what is my absolute dream match. I mean, they're all dream matches, but actually, Mustache Mountain was probably my tag dream match. But in terms of a singles, Zack Sabre Jr. is my guy. Mm. That's just something I've always wanted. I mean, technical wrestling's just my thing, and there are so few people in Australia who really enjoy doing it and who are really skilled at doing it. Like, there are a couple, like Madison is, Robbie's very good at it too, and those kinds of guys. But generally speaking, it's not something that a lot of guys can do or will throw into a lot of matches. So he's the one that I've wanted, and then I got it. So this is going to be something. Next Monday is going to be, you know, very, very special for me.
Yeah, that's the Panthers, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Panthers on Monday,
World Series Wrestling, yes, exactly. And then you've also got in, was it June the 14th? Oh, July 14th, sorry. You've got a NWA championship shot. That's amazing. That's just...
Oh, man, like that got announced without me knowing it.
Oh, really?
They asked me if I was available for the dates and the places, and I said yes, and then they've announced it without telling me what the match was. And I mean, wrestling Magnus is a big thing in and of itself, but the... That's the NWA Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, and like I was
that's the Flair and Steamboat fought over. Like, that's the, like, fuck.
Yeah. like I was saying, like, that is, besides the big gold belt, that NWA Championship belt is my favorite belt.
Oh, man, it's
just... Because that's Dusty's belt, that's Terry Funk's belt, that's, like, Rick's first belt. That, for me, I'm a massive old-school 1970s, 1980s NWA mark.
Yeah.
So, like, that belt to me is the Holy Grail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's such a funny thing. Like, just looking at it and just going, like, I can't believe that I'm having an NWA champion. Like, it's just, oh, man, like, that's the big thing, is wrestling for that in particular championship. Not to take away from the opponent or, like, I mean, he's, you know, he's awesome too, but
done a great job with that belt, because for a long time after Pierce and Cabana, that belt meant nothing really. And he's really trying to build it back up.
Yeah, well, it's good too. And that's good that they're smart enough to do it with someone like that. Like, the talking about card psychology like we were before, championships are a thing. Like, making the championship seem important in order to make the guys seem more important, in order to make the matches seem like they mean something. If you treat the championship belts poorly, then everything else goes to pieces. And NWA, their championship was, you know, that was one of their things. And so after Pierce and Cabana, it kind of fell into obscurity. That was very poor for the company. But now they, you know, they found a way to start making it prominent again. And then I get to fight for it. And then I guess old Cody Rhodes gets the fight for the winner between me and Magnus.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a way to get yourself booked on All In.
Oh, man, yeah, that's what I just, like, you know, just real quick, I'm just going to learn how to, like, just, yeah, so, I mean, so that title will take another leap, really, once it goes on the All In event and Cody Rhodes, you know, might even win it. Like,
yeah, that would, like, no offense to Nick Aldis, because great worker, but if Cody win that belt, would be awesome.
Sorry, I was trying to maintain kayfabe. I don't know anything officially, obviously. No, I have nothing to do with any of that jazz, but from the outside in, I would be very, very surprised if Cody Rhodes is not the new NWA champion after that day.
As a fan, I'd want to see it, just because I love Dusty so much.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, is it's your dad's belt. It makes a lot of sense. for everybody for Cody Rhodes to be champion. It makes a lot of sense for Cody, and it makes a lot of sense for NWA to hitch their wagon to that group of events.
I was going to mention that you'd won the PWA tag titles, but we sort of moved back. But I'll mention anyway. Congratulations on that. Is tagging with Mick something that you absolutely love, or is it any of the Four Nations members a sort of a interchangeable thing?
Yeah, well, we are fairly interchangeable. That's the thing. I've been former champs with Adam Hoffman, and that was fantastic. Like, I mean, part of the other thing is too, is that Four Nations, I feel like the tag division was built around us a little bit. Me and Hoffman won the belts years ago, and before that, nobody wanted to be in a tag team. Like, it was everybody wanted to be singles and do all that kind of thing. And the previous tag team champions to us didn't have a double team move. Like, they literally didn't, because neither of them really wanted to have it. And then after that, me and Hoffman tried to, you know, be the best tag team we could and form the rest of the Nations. And our own private rules are, you know, only double team moves, always wear your colors. That's pretty much the credos of the...
That's awesome. That's great. Thing, yeah.
Hoffman
is so underrated as well.
Yeah, yeah, Hoffman's real good, especially with the tag stuff. Like, he just a lot of the things that happen are all his idea and his coordination and stuff. He's real good. He's got a ladder match for the middleweight championship at Newcastle in a month too, so that should be a real big deal for him. But yeah, no, tagging with Mick's great too, though. He's very, very good, and our tag matches so far have been very, very interesting.
His character work is brilliant. Stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys ever see the thing, but he gets cheered and I get booed. you watch it. There's a real thing that was going around that it was a dueling chant between like Mick Moretti, Mustache Mountain, and it was this whole big thing. So that's turning into something very interesting at PWA. But the recent Max Watts and the Star City. The casino event that we had with Progress, and then the show at Max Watts and stuff like that. I reckon that last PWA show we had this weekend, I was saying to the wrestlers, that may have been the best show we've ever had. Wow. Like, PWA has finally found their venue, I think, in Max Watts. Yep. And they're finally starting to really – I mean, they've always been fantastic, but now everything's just clicking.
But what a venue it is too. I mean, it's one of the biggest sort of venue names in Sydney you can have too.
Yeah. Like, you might be – I don't know. We might be getting to probably past the end of our time here. But, like, the thing that I would say about that in particular in terms of wrestling in general, like, we're talking about all the – famous people and stuff that are coming here that we get to wrestle. Mm-hmm. It's all just indicative of how popular wrestling's starting to become. Wrestling's starting to become cool again. So like us not having to, you know, it's not a Sunday afternoon at the local Ari anymore. It's a real venue.
Mm.
Like it is a venue that people go to see things at, and it does not operate for any other reason than to be a event venue. And the same with the Star City thing. Like, it's just, we're a real thing now. Like,
yeah.
We're not renting a room in the back of an RSL club while other people are there having their dinner and playing bowls. We're a fucking event now. And that's the direction we're starting to move towards, just because everything's getting bigger and popular. So
yeah, well, that's the same with Riot City Wrestling did their show at HQ.
That looked amazing.
Oh my God, didn't it?
Messaging them, yeah, just saying like, holy crap, your venue looks fantastic. It was just a picture, but it just looked spectacular.
Yeah, well, I had the night before, I had Maddie and Brody sending me videos of the just their entrances, just to, you know, how they do the rehearsal sort of thing for the tech guys. And I was sitting there going, dude, that is like, that is WWE quality videos and entrance sort of thing. That's amazing.
And the thing is too, that people don't understand this either. If I was promoting a show and I had the option between the best roster in the world and a place that didn't have good lighting, like wasn't a good atmosphere, didn't have a good event feel, or I had a place with spectacular entrance gear and a great event feel and a grungy thing where the lighting was all kind of great and you had like an okay roster, mm-hmm. which one would I rather promote? You'd go with the okay roster in the good venue.
Yeah.
It makes such a difference to the crowd. Like, I mean, if you don't have the light, like if the whole crowd is lit up the whole time during the show, like you don't have the crowd being dark and the ring being lit up and stuff like that. Like if you don't have, you know, entrance videos, you don't have, if the music sounds bad, if the microphone is cutting in and out and stuff like that, it just kills the event. But if you've got all those things going for you, yeah, the show's just that much better.
Yeah. Oh, I've always said, like, and I equate it to a meal. If I'm sitting down to a meal and it's a dirty plate in a dingy restaurant, it doesn't matter how good the steak is, I'm still not going to enjoy it because I'm not yet in the right mood for it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It just doesn't. Yeah. You need. Well, I always talk about it like a candy wrapper. And I use this analogy a lot, and I use this analogy too for people being in good shape and people having proper wrestling gear as well. Like you could have the best candy bar in the world, but if that wrapper looks like it's dirty and it's covered in shit and it looks poor, no one's going to pick it up.
No.
You know, like, or if your candy bar is okay, but it's wrapped in just the greatest looking wrapper in the world, everyone's going to love it and you're going to sell a lot of
Yeah, that's that is exactly right. It's exactly what I mean. You've got to entice people you've got to put them in the right mood for a good show.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
sometimes that covers up. If you've got guys out there that aren't as experienced and maybe will blow something, that covers it up because they're already in a really good mood anyway. So a lot of times
crowd goes back to the opening match thing. You know, that's why you need the best guys to set the tone. And then if the guys who are on second and third aren't as strong, the crowd's a lot more forgiving.
Exactly. If you've got them in a good mood, they're more forgiving.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I think we went way over time, but that is fine because it was just no. It was great content. I love it. I've really, really enjoyed this interview, mate. So,
Jack, Bob, I know I get a little bit preachy sometimes, but it mostly, like, when I say to people again, I try not to be an ego thing. We're just getting to a point now where we're just getting real sick of, especially when stuff's starting to get popular. This isn't a game anymore. This is a real professional business making, like money making thing. So again, if you can't stand by, if you don't put your money where your mouth is, if you don't train hard, if you don't have the expertise, we're at a point where I think we need to start calling people out.
Yeah.
If
people want to see PWA or say New Year Pro shows and they're not in the state, is there a way they can see it, like a streaming service or
PWAplay.com. We should actually have last Saturday's event up by the end of the week. And we have a bit of content on there, and Newcastle Pro is working on the same thing. It's called NuiProPlay.com. It's all in the same space. It just redirects to the same website. It's all together. So if you want to see PWA, you can see Newcastle Pro. It's the same thing. PWAplay.com, you can check all that stuff out.
All right. And if people want to follow you on your socials, how can they do that?
It's all Jack Bonza. Twitter's Jack. I'm getting a lot more active on Twitter. It's at Jack Bonza, one word. I have a Facebook page that's Jack Bonza, and I also have a Facebook account that's Jack Bonza. I don't really pay any attention to the page. It's mostly the account. So add me on there, and I have an Instagram and Snapchat as well. It's all just Jack Bonza. No one's ever tried to steal my name. So.
Oh, thank God for that. I met you a few years ago. I think we did an Adam Pearce promo class together, and after hearing your first promo that you did in front of him, mate, I was a fan. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to thank Jack for coming on there. It was really good and possibly one of my favorite interviews I've done for a long time. Really good guy to talk to, really easy to talk to, so knowledgeable from a marketing and behind the scenes standpoint of a wrestling show, and I really hope you did listen to that and maybe picked a little bit of backstage stuff from it, because that was really interesting. And from my point of view anyway, I thought that was really interesting. And not only that, he is one of the best wrestlers in the country today. Being said, I mean, he's got Zack Sabre Jr. on the 25th for International Assault, and then on July the 14th, if you're in Queensland, get to House of Hardcore and watch him in the NWA Heavyweight Championship match against Nick Aldis. I think you heard, well, you could tell by listening to both of us in that interview how much we both marked out over the fact he's having an NWA Heavyweight Championship match. So before we hit to where the action is around the country, here are my views from the East. I'm no good, yes, I'm no good.
good, let me tell you, no good, girl. I'm no good, I'm no good for nothing.
So after hearing all the title changes this weekend, are you sitting there saying, damn, I should have went to that show? Well, yeah, you should have. Australian Pro Wrestling is the best quality-wise it has ever been, but it needs your guys' support for it to flourish even more. Now, could you imagine a year or so if MCW or a PWA could tour UK for ex-Progress shows like Progress did here this year? It could happen, but it needs fans to show up and show out. Buy merch, wear it proudly, and if people ask you about it, don't hide the fact you're a wrestling fan. Promote it. Tell people to get out and check out a show. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, you heard that the WWE have announced Super Showdown for October the 6th at the MCG with Triple H and Undertaker headlining the card. Now, the reason I mention this, even though it's amazing, it will probably mean that the WWE will have another set of tryouts. So, boys and girls, if you're already working hard, time to double that effort and reach for your dreams. That's it for this Views from the East. I'm Todd Eastman, that's my opinion, and you're all entitled to it. Now time to find out where the action is. And on this weekend, we have New South Wales, Saturday 23rd, Future Wrestling Australia Resolution at the Bowman Hall Blacktown, headlined by former WWE superstar The Hurricane, and also Sheol Guerrero making an appearance. That's Eddie's daughter, so get along to that. Also on the card, Mr. Juicy, Shazza McKenzie, Firestar Flash, Savannah Summers, and many more. Whole range of ticket prices from this one, ranging from $50 for VIP down to $15 general admission. Tickets are at moshtix.com.au. And in Victoria, very quiet during the two-night World Series wrestling events, and I'll read all those dates out at the end of this sort of bit, because it's a condensed thing, and I sort of just put them all in together. In Perth, nothing on, so I don't know, get around it, boys. Watch TV, I guess. on Sunday, get the iPay-per-view of World Series Wrestling. But that's it for Perth. In Adelaide, we do also have, not to mention the World Series Wrestling, but on Saturday 23rd, PWSA has Super Slam 8 at the PWSA Arena in Paraka. Check their Facebook for ticketing details on that one. In my hometown, or my home city of Queensland, state of Queensland, what am I doing? On Saturday the 23rd, Venom Pro Wrestling has Redemption at the Bean Lee Bowls Club with Caveman Ugg, Sid Parker, Erica Reed, Jake Nova, Jackson Cross, Giant Coyote, Rip Riley, and many, many more. Message their Facebook for ticketing details on that one. Adults are $25 and kids are $10. And also on Saturday, United Pro Wrestling presents Warpath at the Shed in Aussie World, featuring 13 versus JXT, and also on the card, EC Diamond. Now, EC Diamond is a guy that I think has got a big future. Really, really good wrestler. Really a nice guy, too. He is challenging for the UPW Championship against Matthew Gabriel. So if you're up that way around the Shed in Aussie World, get out to that one. Adults are $20 and kids are $15 at stickytickets.com.au. And finally, I'm going to rattle off now all the World Series Wrestling International Assault Date Tours, or tour dates. If you're listening to or watch the vodcast that is on our Facebook page, Wrestle Radio Australia, I did a 20-minute rundown of the iPay-per-view, which is happening on Sunday, with my good mate Wolf Dog. I love Wolfie, and shout out to Wolfie if you're listening to this, mate. Thanks for coming on. But we'll get to the dates for the whole tour here. In Melbourne, two nights, Friday and Saturday night at the Southeastern Entertainment Centre. Night two is completely sold out, so try and get your tickets for night one on the Friday. That'll be great. Also on Sunday, you should know about this one, it's Adelaide for the pay-per-view, or the iPay-per-view on the Fight app. So it's FYTE app, get into it. I think it's like $16 Australian. Get into it and support an Australian promotion, getting themselves onto iPay-per-view. It's awesome. It is at the Dompolski Centre. Get your tickets. I think there's still some remaining for that one, so get that one and get your head on TV. And on Monday, Sydney, the 25th, Penrith Panthers Evans Centre. Tickets for all these events are available at worldserieswrestling.com, so get onto them and support Australian wrestling all around the country. Alright, that does it for this episode of Wrestle Radio Australia. I just want to thank once again Jack Bonds for coming on. Thank you very much, mate. And I mentioned this on the last episode. It's something terrible that happened a few years ago with Shazza McKenzie, and just some dead shits. And I don't like getting up and really starting to swear on this pod, because I'm trying to be a good guy, I'm trying to be nice on this, but there are some absolute fuckwits out there, and there are fuckwits that are actually in this business, and these are guys that I will not mention on the show, and I will not promote their stuff, I will not promote their promotions, I will not have anything to do with them on this show. They are the lowest form of human to attack a woman the way they have done, verbally and by text and by Facebook posts and etc. etc. You guys are absolutely fucking scumbags, alright? I'm absolutely, it makes me sick to my stomach to think there are people like you in a business I fucking love. Anyway, that's it for that. I apologize for that, but I had to get that off my chest. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to WRA. It's free and you can do it on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere you get your podcast from. If you do stop by iTunes, give us a rating and review while you're there. Give us a 5-star rating. Helps us get inside more ears. Helps us get on the algorithm so more people get to see the show. Also, make sure you like us on Facebook. Just search Wrestle Radio Australia, and on Twitter at Wrestle Radio AU, or me personally at Beast Eastman. And now it's time to, well, we're going to send it home. And what better way to send it home with Todd's Terrible Wrestling Song. And this one is from CWA in Germany. If you know about it, Otto Wanz's promotion. If you're a hardcore wrestling fan, you will know about it. This one is called Young, Strong and Healthy. It features the roster from back in, I think it's the 80s. Well, it looks like the 80s when you're looking at the film clip. And, well, actually, no, it would be the 90s, because there is a young PN News from WCW, if you remember him, trying to sing, and he probably should have sticked to rapping, to be perfectly honest. Anyway, we are out of here. I'm Todd Eastman, and this has been Wrestle Radio Australia.
We're tender and slim, born to fight and to win. We've got giant power, a mountain size. Great head who's gentle eyes. Bunch of nice guys, a sight for sore eyes. If you don't sympathize, wish you can make you wise.